It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. Wangari Maathai's Greenbelt Movement began as a way to provide fuel close to home for Kenyan women, to encourage planting nutritious food, and to green the hillsides. Now the movement encompasses thousands of community nurseries and nearly 100,000 members. But as communities organize, they do more than plant trees. Wangari Maathai's daughter Wanjira explains.
They plant trees. Okay, 1,000 trees, 2,000 trees. Wow, okay. We have fruit. Maybe we should sell this fruit. We have too much fruit. Let's do. So just one thing leads to the other.
Living on Earth's Ingrid Lobet continues our story.
Greenbelt organizers don't spend much time in the office. They're usually on the road visiting communities, bouncing along past the billboards for Nido powdered milk and Kenya tea, along rutted roads people say by now should be paved with gems for all the money past governments have supposedly spent on them. We reach today's destination, the village of Gatito, at sunset. People in this Greenbelt group had been planting trees for shade, firewood, and income for a while when they decided to address another problem. During the rainy season when food is abundant, it spoils easily because there's little power and no refrigeration. During the dry season, food is scarce. So Greenbelt organizers taught people here how to dry their food in the sun for when it's needed. Now children are eating a lot more vegetables. But Greenbelt member Joyce Kagethi says there's something else. She sees herself differently since the Greenbelt movement came to town.
Before, I worked in the farm compound and looked after my children. I couldn't stand up amongst people or give them my views about things. I was not able to do even the smallest thing in this respect. Professor came here, and she showed us that a woman has the right to speak. And when she speaks, she can make things advance. A woman has a right to speak. And now I feel, if I speak, things can move forward.
Over the years, the Greenbelt movement has cut a path quite different from most Western environmental organizations. The inverse of tightly focused, it can seem like an octopus to the outsider with tentacles in every conceivable community problem, searching for a solution.
I want to show you my goat. I call it Wakip. Wakip was the first goat here. That is his daughter, and also this one is hers.
Jeffney and Joyce Mwangi received one goat and then gave back its first female offspring to another Greenbelt member.
So when I give them one, the other goat will remain mine, my property. If I want to slaughter it, if I want to sell it, it's mine.
And the Mwangis are also taking advantage of one of Greenbelt's latest community income activities, beekeeping.
I spoke to the Greenbelt movement. They told me there is a revolving fund. I can be given some beehives, keep bees, and I will not pay with the money. I'll pay with the planting trees. So I was given 10 beehives. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then I'll plant 8,000 trees. Not me alone, with my group members. When we plant them, then the beehives will be ours.
But for several years now, the Greenbelt movement has reached beyond even its many rural projects and its occasional urban conflicts. Pushed partly by donor organizations, it's taken on restoring Kenya's degraded forests. The British planted exotic eucalyptus and pines in the forests for timber and industrial tea drying. They also invited farmers in to plant crops. So now the Greenbelt movement is reaching out to professional foresters as allies.
My name is Miriam Kamau. I'm the forester in charge of Jukini Forestation in Kerugoya district of Kenya.
The red-brown earth here has a sweet, deep smell. The sunlight's branch tips an electric green. Miriam Kamau says when the Greenbelt Movement came to her and asked if they could plant trees in the forest, she wasn't sure what to think.
I was afraid because I didn't know their intentions. I didn't know if they are prophets of doom. I didn't know if they are coming to witch hunt me. So at first, there was that personal fear.
But Kamau remembered her father, who was not a trained forester, but planted trees. The Greenbelt members reminded her of him.
Even most people are telling me to abandon them. And I'm telling you today, I'm very happy because even the fear I had, it's gone. I'm seeing them, I find them like now, even their channel for me to learn more, even to advance. I've been able to learn from them and we have been able to do great things. So even I would urge where Greenbelt has not started, let people not fear them.
Let people not fear them, Kamau says, but she concedes there were problems with Greenbelt planters in the forest.
To start with, you know, they are not qualified. So there were some hitches. Like the spacing in the forests, they were planting haphazardly. They were planting theirs very closely, close together. And I was able to tell them to try and space these trees.
This free labor has proved valuable to Kamau. Greenbelt workers cleared acres of thorny brush to plant indigenous trees when the Forest Service was laying off workers.
That's the African cricket. You can hear that?
This may be a good model for Kenya's forests, but it represents a fundamental shift for Greenbelt. Under some pressure from donors, it now only pays for seedlings planted on public land, not those planted at home. To plant in the forest, members have to travel, often on foot, carrying heavy seedlings. Greenbelt staffer Jogu Kahari says the organization doesn't have the money to pay for both.
Greenbelt would have liked to be able to compensate or give a token appreciation of planted trees because it keeps the movement alive. But funding is not. And also what we're asking the women to do in terms of planting trees on the public land is so much more demanding. And the Greenbelt really needs to get money to support the women. Although you're not even paying them, provide transport for the seedlings. Don't tell the women to carry those seedlings on their backs. Fundraising for that kind of work.
The fear is that people will simply choose to plant fewer trees, a serious reverse for a movement with tree planting at its heart. There have been reverses before. In fact, now at age 30, Greenbelt is revisiting some of those failures with new ideas. In Machakos, people farm the front lines of desiccation. Greenbelt failed here to get people to water seedlings. The baby trees were just extra mouths to feed. Sipora Yolodiaka.
Before, I used to spend 1.5 hours looking for water, and still I only came back with 5 gallons. And because 5 gallons isn't enough, we'd often have to walk another 1.5 hours to fetch another 5 gallons in the same day. If you had a small baby and no one to care for it, you have to carry the baby and the jerry can to fetch water. When I'm done fetching water, I must organize for lunch. After lunch, it's now time to go to where the animals are to make sure they have water.
Today, Yolodiaka stands beside a year-round source of water, a pond created by damming the river here. Dams are somewhat unpopular among Western environmentalists, but different forms of pooling or water harvesting are no longer rare in some dry countries.
But now, I can just come down to the water and my goats drink and then go home in a short time. With the extra hours, I have time to plant and tend trees with my group, to work on my own farm plot, to plant vegetables, lots of things.
Now that there is water, people here are farming things that would have been unimaginable before and are making money from it. They grow tomatoes, potatoes, and papaya in holes designed to slow rainy runoff and percolate water back into the river. Nearby communities clamor for similar dams. People in Machakos concede there has been more malaria since they created this standing water, but several people said it's worth it.
We need water. We don't care about malaria. We have to use nets.
More water. More is what people want from Greenbelt these days. More planting containers, more spades, more dams. The nation's schools now also want more, thanks to a pilot program Greenbelt has begun for 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. It's a project that could launch a new constituency for a movement whose members are mostly middle-aged. With a grant from a U.S. donor, organizers began teaching river ecology at a middle school. The kids collected leaves from two native Kenyan tree species, fig and Meru oak, and from eucalyptus, an Australian species introduced by the British, David Yagi.
And then we put them in a pack. Then we put them in the river.
The kids measure river temperature and make other observations, then let the separate baskets of leaves lie underwater in the current for 3 weeks. Then they retrieve them. When they retrieved the native leaf packs, the leaves were decomposed down to their leaf skeletons by insects. The kids counted 16 kinds of mayflies, donflies, and other macroinvertebrates.
But in the leaf pack of the eucalyptus, we only found one type of macroinvertebrate.
The lesson, Yagi says, is that eucalyptus was not contributing to the river's ecosystem. 70 Kenyan schools now participate in Leaf Pack, and there are requests from 200 more. Meanwhile, Greenbelt has been asked to organize tree planting for people in prison. And they've been actively working to turn Kenyan soldiers into tree planters. According to the organization, soldiers have already planted tens of thousands of seedlings. Wangari Maathai.
Recently, I was talking to some soldiers in Kenya, and because they wanted to plant trees. And I took advantage of that situation to explain to them, to show them that although they are soldiers, they are trained to protect the borders of the country, they are trained to protect the country, that in fact the country was disappearing below their feet without knowing, while holding their guns. I said, you hold your gun, what are you protecting? The whole country is disappearing with the wind and with the water. When you look at the rivers and they are brown, that's your country disappearing, going into the Indian Ocean. So if you really want to protect, you should hold the gun on your right and a tree seedling on your left. That's when you become a good soldier.
The army, the prisons, the schools. The Greenbelt movement is more popular than ever and stretched thin. On one hand, Wangari Maathai's Nobel Peace Prize brought recognition to the movement in Kenya and throughout the world, a validation of the work. As Wanjira Maathai says, we no longer have to convince people. Members like Eunice Yokabe feel lifted up. She stands surrounded by her nursery outside Nairobi. For mango alone, her group can easily grow 50,000 seedlings a year.
I was very happy for Professor because I know she worked here. She didn't go away. She fought here in Kenya. And we are very happy, we as women, for Professor. We feel we are... We are people who are recognized, women, you know, African women. We are put down by the men, but now we have the courage to move on with the work, to work hard. Yeah, we have the courage now to talk about it. Yeah.
It's more difficult now for Wangari Maathai to visit people's houses. She's a member of parliament, an assistant minister for the environment. She belongs to the world now. In New York, Brazzaville, Rome, and Tokyo, she presses the case for topsoil, for Africa's tropical forests, and for better government. When she's back home, crowds of people await her for matters as large as the Congo Basin or as small as a village water contract. Her daughter and chief of staff, Wanjira, describes the crush outside a United Nations meeting room.
We have about 6,000 invitations. Yes, there's a lot of demand on the work, on the staff, and the expansion capacity of Greenbelt. So there's the bigger demand for resources. And so the idea now is really to create a base, an endowment for the Greenbelt movement so that the fundraising it doesn't become the driving force of what we do.
Grants from donors in Norway, the Netherlands, Austria, and the United States have supported the bulk of Greenbelt work until now. One kind of new offer makes them wary. As the world gears up to trade in the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide to address the Earth's warming, the Greenbelt movement has been approached because their stands of trees could be certified as a place where carbon is stored. But senior staffer Jogu Kahari says they'll have to consider the offers carefully.
The source of the money is people who are polluting somewhere. So they are very keen for the planting to succeed and to be certified so that they can trade in that carbon credit. So we have to be very careful about this big money, because we want the community to plant trees because they understand they are caring for the environment, and to be able, if they decide somewhere down the road to use some of the trees, they should be able to do that.
With the increased demands the Nobel Prize has brought, there's sometimes a weariness that shades Wangari Maathai's willing smile. Everyone around her, though, tires before she does. And her message is unchanging. Don't talk about planting trees, plant them. Her hand on the shovel is noticeably firmer than those of the diplomats who sometimes surround her as she plants yet another seedling, this one in New York.
Yeah, we must dirty our hands. When God created the earth, he covered it the way it is here. The soil is supposed to be covered in its green color. When you see the soil, it is crying to be clothed with green vegetation. That's the nature of the land. So when the soil is exposed, in many ways, it is crying out for help. It is naked, and it needs to be clothed in its color, in its cloth of green. That's where the concept of the Green Belt Movement came from. It is to clothe the earth with her dress.
Remember what millions of hands can do, Wangari Maathai often reminds people. Next, the Greenbelt Movement carries that message thousands of miles away to some of the most naked land on the planet, the stripped clean slopes of Haiti. For Living on Earth, I'm Ingrid Lobet.
Our story on Wangari Maathai and her Kenyan Greenbelt Movement was reported and produced by Ingrid Lobet and edited by Chris Ballman. Thanks to Murethi Kafuri, David Mutinda, Doug Patterson of KUOW in Seattle, Common Ground Productions, Alan Dater and Lisa Merton, the Pacifica Radio Archive, the American Friends Service Committee Film and Video Library, the Africa Development Foundation, Fenton Communications, and Mainichi Newspapers. Special support was provided by the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our technical director is Dennis Foley. Allison Dean composed our themes. You can find us at livingonearth.org. I'm Steve Kerwood. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science and Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt, smoothies, and milk. 10% of profits are donated to efforts that help protect and restore the earth. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from NPR member stations and the Ford Foundation for reporting on U.S. environment and development issues and the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.